Dr. Joan Houston Hall is an expert on the American English language and its regional and social dialects. She is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, which just recently published its fifth volume of this massive work. And she joins us now from down in Madison. Dr. Hall, thank you so much for being on the Roadhouse again.
You're very welcome.
I don't know if you remember it. You were on with us. Well, let's see. When did the last volume get finished?
Well, the last volume wasn't finished in 2002, but I think we chatted in 2009.
I think that's correct.
Yes, there was a very nice Associated Press article about Derek.
That's right. That's what it was. In fact, I was just on your website, and there's a very nice picture of the Wisconsin Regents presenting a plaque to you. Very, very nice.
Yes, thank you.
However, I've got my first question is, the notes that I received said that the most recent volume, which is the fifth one, covers from Slab to Zydeco and is the final volume, but I read someplace else that there's a sixth volume coming. Is that true?
Well, that's true.
Explain the mystery,
volume
please.
Is the last volume of text because it's hard to go beyond Zydeco.
I was thinking the same thing. I couldn't think of a word that was after that.
Right. The sixth volume will be very different. It's a volume of supplementary materials.
Which I see.
Fascinating, both for researchers and for people who love language.
Well,
right now, if you want to know all the synonyms for a long sandwich with meats and cheeses and lettuce and tomatoes, you can look through the five volumes of text, and you can see that hero, hoagie, sub, grinder, Cuban, torpedo, poor boy, and all the rest have very different regional distributions. But in the sixth volume, we'll have them all laid out on facing pages.
Oh.
So you can see it right at a glance. It'll be just fascinating.
Fascinating, but I wouldn't think nearly as much fun as pouring through all the various ones. It really, on the website, you, of course, have samples and where you can go and got a whole bunch of words on one page, I think 100. And it's just so much fun to look at these words and words that, in fact, I remember hearing in the past and never did know the origin of or even what it really meant. But before we talk about that, how long have you... I know that this has been an incredibly... a massive project is putting it mildly. When did you first start, or when did someone first start putting this Dictionary of American Regional English together, and why?
Well, the actual field work for it began in 1965, but the idea is much longer than that. In 1889, the American Dialect Society was formed with the idea that it would provide or produce a dictionary of American dialects that would be similar to the English dialect dictionary. But it didn't happen quickly. They produced lots of journal articles with lists of regional words. But it wasn't until the late 40s when Frederick Cassidy here at the University of Wisconsin decided it was time to do a preliminary study here in Wisconsin. So he surveyed 50 communities across this state and tested out a very large questionnaire to see whether it would work. And it did. So he went to the Dialect Society and reported on his work, and they said, hey, great job, Fred. But nothing was done. So another decade passed, and he went back to the Society with an essay called The American Dialect Society Dictionary, How Soon? And at that point, they said, well, if you want to do it, we'll appoint you the chief editor and let you get started. So he did.
And how long have you been working on it?
I've been here since 1975.
Wow.
So all of the field work had been done, but we were just beginning the editorial process.
Now, when you say field work, Dr. Hall, what exactly does that mean? I mean, I assume it means pulling these words together, but how do you do that? How do you come up with, you know, how does Schnickelfritz get to you?
Okay, well, this was a massive project in which 1,002 communities across the country were selected to reflect the population density as of the 1960 census. So there were urban populations in proportion to the country as a whole and on down through the very rural places. And field workers, who were mostly graduate students, went to each of these communities with a questionnaire that had more than 1,600 questions about every part of our daily life: food, clothing, time, weather, plants and animals, farming, school, religion, health, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to find people who lived in those communities, who had lived there all their lives, and who were willing to give them a lot of time to answer the questions.
Hmm.
And once that was done, all the data were sent back to Madison, where they were put on a funny-looking map.
It is a funny-looking map. I was going to ask you about that.
Yes. It doesn't look like the geographic map exactly, though you can see the relationship.
There's a resemblance there, I'd agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but each state has been made as large as necessary to reflect the population.
Oh.
So you know that Connecticut is a tiny little state, but it has a lot of people. New Mexico, on the other hand, is a huge state with very few people. So in our map, Connecticut had to be expanded to reflect those people, and New Mexico had to be shrunk.
Sure, sure, which explains why Idaho and Montana are just real skinny little.
Yes.
Up and down. Yeah, now it makes sense. Now it makes sense. Well, I guess, you know, obviously for anybody that loves words or even doesn't, to look at some of these and then go look for some of the original usage that you came up with, it's really fun. But was there a particular market or target group or someone that you were doing this on behalf of?
Well, we assumed from the beginning that language researchers, of course, would be interested, and that librarians all over the country would be very interested, because they get strange questions all the time. And one of my favorites came from a librarian in Tennessee who wrote that a patron had come in wanting to know about dry land fish. And she couldn't figure any fish that would be dry land. So finally she looked in DARE and found that it's a very nicely regional term, Kentucky and Tennessee, for a mushroom.
Oh.
But in addition to librarians, we've discovered that physicians also find it incredibly useful. My favorite example comes from someone who wrote to us saying that he had grown up in Maine and had gone to medical school there and had been posted for his first job in western Pennsylvania. A patient came in saying, "Doc, I've been rifting and I got jags in my leaders."
I bet you do.
The poor guy didn't have a clue. But if he had had DARE, he could have looked up to find out that to rift means to belch, and it's a very Pennsylvania term. And to have jags in your leaders means to have sharp pains in tendons, particularly the ones in your neck.
Oh, for crying out loud. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, how large, I want to remind our listeners, we're visiting with Dr. Joan Houston Hall, who is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. How large are the five volumes? When I say large, I mean, how many pages are we talking about?
Well, the last one had 1,296 pages. It was slightly larger than the others, but they're all between about 1,000 and 1,200.
Hmm. And I need to ask, if somebody ordered five volumes now, what does that cost?
Well, it's not inexpensive. It's about $500. There is a...
For the whole set?
Yes.
Well, that doesn't seem so expensive to me.
Oh,
For what you're getting. No, it really doesn't. Now for what you're getting.
Yes, it is a tremendous amount of information. And I should say that DARE is not just based on the field work that was done between 1965 and 70. It's also, like the Oxford English Dictionary, a historical dictionary. So for every word we enter, we include the very earliest example we can find in written material,
uh-huh,
and others through every word's history up to a late example.
Yeah.
So in the fifth volume that's published in 2012, we have quotations from 2011.
Uh-huh. So the fieldwork was done from 65 through 70.
Mm-hmm.
But so Is there a criteria or is there a standard for how old a word has to be? For instance, could a word have come into being since 1985, let's say, and it's commonly used, or is that considered a fad for just that short of time?
You're right in suggesting that regional terms need a little bit of time to get established. But if there's enough evidence, even contemporary terms will be included. My favorite example of this is the term skeevy that comes from Connecticut, New York, New Jersey.
I'm sorry, skeevy?
Skeevy. If you're looking for an apartment and you go into one and it's just disgustingly dirty, you might say, ugh, this is skeevy, or it skeeves me out.
Oh, so that would be similar to in our area, and I don't know if this is a scuzzy.
Scuzzy, similar, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But skeevy seems to come from the Italian verb, scaffare, which means to disgust or be disgusted by. And, of course, the reason for the regionality is that New York, New Jersey, Connecticut is a place with lots of Italian settlement.
Now, do you find that a lot of the words do have origins in, let's say, another language or... as opposed to just somebody made up the word scuzzy and it kind of caught on?
Yes, we certainly do. And in fact, you won't be surprised to hear that Minnesota has lots of words coming from Norwegian.
Do tell.
My favorite, of course, is also found in Wisconsin, and that's the wonderful exclamation, oofta.
Oofta, of course. Yeah, in fact, our station manager this morning, we were talking on the air about doing this interview tonight, and she said, I wonder if oofda is one of them.
Yes, indeed.
Sure.
And, of course, lots of food terms reflect our ethnic backgrounds. So Minnesota and Wisconsin have things like lutefisk and lefse and krumkaka and kringle.
And kolachkis.
Kolachkis.
Yes.
Limpa, all sorts of wonderful foods.
Now, I have to tell you a personal story. The last time we were on, I asked you what your favorite one of your favorite words was, and you told me about a word called babashili.
Yes.
And I don't know if I mentioned it at the time, but the woman who is now my wife, who was then my, well, that was the problem. We'd been together for a number of years. We're both well past teenagers, and so introducing her as my partner never worked because are we in business together? Boyfriend, girlfriend, we were well past that. We never could figure out how to introduce each other. So after you told me about that, I thought it perfect. I would introduce her as my babashili. And shortly after that, we decided we better get married so we can just simply do husband and wife because nobody could figure out what babashili was. But I did use it for a while.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah. So now, do you think that the use for the dictionary is more for libraries and... organizations rather than individuals?
Oh, no.
No?
Definitely. It's a language lover's delight. People just start looking and find that they have spent an hour without knowing it. But I would like to suggest some other professional uses.
Oh, great.
One that people really get intrigued by is the use by forensic linguists. And my favorite example has to do with a case in Ohio, where a child was abducted, and the person sent a ransom note to the parents saying, put $10,000 cash in a diaper bag on the Devil Strip. Well, who knew what the Devil Strip was? It wasn't in the Oxford, it's not in Webster's Third, it's not in any standard dictionary of American English, but it is in Dare, where it makes it clear that the Devil Strip is that strip of grass between the sidewalk and the street that goes by dozens of different names across the country.
Sure, we knew it as Boulevard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Devil Strip is used in a very circumscribed area, almost solely in the triangle outlined by Youngstown, Cleveland, and Akron, Ohio.
Oh, my gosh.
And the use of that term in the note was part of the reason the guy was caught.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, were there very many words, I'm sure people must call you, as you said before, and tell you about words that they heard and that maybe you look at. But are there words that people would call with where you just say, no, that's just not, there's not either wide enough usage or it's just way too particular? Do you know what I'm asking?
Well, sometimes we actually do include words for which we have only one example.
Ah.
And that's particularly true from the fieldwork. And the reason that we sometimes include them is that we're assuming that these people that we interviewed were good examples of their community. And so probably the words they used are used by other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that some people have family words. So we have to weigh the balance and see whether we think that it really is illustrative of the whole community. But to show that we only have one example, we put what's called a double dagger in the margin near the head word, so that we tell people, look, this is all we have. We think it's legitimate, make your own judgment.
Sure, sure.
And very often we've found that when we've done that, we've found additional information later.
Now, I understand that there's also going to be an electronic edition of the dictionary. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it should launch in late 2013. And we're very excited about it because not only is it a great browse, but it will provide lots of good searching mechanisms so that if you want to look up a category such as food, you can get to all of the responses to the food questions in the DARE survey. But the favorite of mine that is a feature of this electronic edition is that we did audio recordings with the people who answered the questionnaires. And in the book, we say 1968 DARE tape, Alabama 1, for a recording with our Alabama 1 informant. So now, in the digital edition, you can click on that and actually hear the recording from that particular place.
Uh-huh.
So they're from all over the country.
Now, we should let people know, we're kind of drawing to the end, and I do want to ask you about some specific words, but we should let people know that for right now, if they're interested, if they'd like to learn more about the Dictionary of American Regional English, they can go to your website, which is quite simply dare.wisc.edu.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful website. It's just really fun. But now let's talk about some of the words.
Let me say,
I'm sorry.
Interrupt for a minute. There's a second website that was put together by the UW-Madison that also has some wonderful things like quizzes, and it shows you where we went in every state. And that one is dare.news.wisc.edu. So it's two places.
Dare with news in there.
Yes.
Well, it's in the few minutes that we have left, and I wish we had way more time, but let's talk about some particular words. And I mentioned this one earlier because I can remember hearing it as a kid, and that word was schnickelfritz.
Oh,
you're just nothing but a schnickelfritz.
Yes, you must have some German background.
Well, I don't. Oh. So I'm trying to remember how I would have ever heard that. Oh, I know. I think. Well, anyway, that's not important. That word means a mischievous little boy or a scamp. Now, what part of the country does that come from, and what were the origins of it? Do you know?
Well, actually, it's not distinctly regional, but it does occur wherever there were major German populations.
Uh-huh.
And Fritz, of course, is the boy's name.
Yep.
And I can't remember. I think Schnickel. I'll look it up.
Well,
I'm sorry, I don't remember the first part.
Well, Schnickel is actually a little boy's peanut.
That's right, yeah, okay. So that, as far as we know, is the etymology of it.
Huh. Now, it also, where was it? There's some other words that people use that I also remember. There's variations. The way I was using it was Schnickel, Fritz. There's also Sniggle, Fritz. And Schnickelfritz, but I'm looking at it now, and I'm not going to find them. That's all right. With the most recent edition, what are some of your favorite words?
Well, one of them is Willywags. If you want to talk about somebody who lives out in a really remote area, you can say, oh, he's from the boonies, or he's from...
The Tulies.
The Tulies, yeah. Particularly if you're from California, you call it the Tulies. But if you're from Philadelphia, you might say, oh, he's from East Jibib. But if you're in Maine, you could say, he's from the Willywags.
Remember that, Buck. I'm talking to my co-host now. We have lots of people up here that live out in the boonies, so they're out in the Willywags.
That's where I live.
Yeah, that's right. What about another one?
Well, how about upscuttle? That's a nice Southern Appalachian word for a disturbance or a commotion. Oh, those guys just got drunk and had an upscuttle.
Now, I notice a fair number of the words, as I mentioned earlier, you have about 100 words that you have examples of. Things like, Buck and I were talking off the air, hooky bob, which is a thing that we used to do all the time up, you know, in Minnesota, of course, hooking, grabbing a hold of a bumper, the rear bumper of a car, and letting them tow you around.
Yeah, is that what you called it, though?
We did.
You did.
Now, Buck used to do it, too, but he doesn't remember calling it that, so.
Yeah, it goes by a lot of different names. Further east, it's skitching or skeeching. In Utah, it's bum riding, and it has some other names, too. But my recollection is that hooky bobbing is particularly found in the Northwest.
Ah, okay.
So I guess it moved east.
Moved somewhere there east, yeah. But a lot of them seem to have to do with being mischievous or deceitful, at least on this particular list. There's several where that's what they are. People must have come up with unusual way to not compliment somebody.
Well, they did, and we had a couple of questions asking how you say that somebody really seems stupid, and those are wonderful. He doesn't know enough to carry guts to a bear. He doesn't know enough to bell a buzzard. He doesn't know enough to pound sand down a rat hole. Or he doesn't know enough to pour piss out of a boot.
Yep. Heard at least a couple of those anyway. Yeah.
And my favorite is people who can't stop there, and they say, he doesn't know enough to pour piss out of a boot with a hole in the toe and directions on the heel.
That's dumb. That is dumb. We have been visiting with Dr. Joan Houston Hall. She is an expert on the American English language and its regional and social dialects. She is also the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, which has just published its fifth volume and takes it all the way through the end of Z. Once again, Dr. Hall, I want to thank you so much. It's just fascinating to look at this. I just love it. And it must have been... Now, I got to ask you this. I know that you're working on the electronic edition. I know that you're doing the research one for number 6. When it gets all put together, what are you going to do then?
Well, you know, the language keeps changing.
Okay, so there's always room to grow, right?
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure.
Take care.
You too.
Good night.